Hey, Brendan.
Hey, Alan.
It's time for another Not a Thing podcast. Woohoo!
We are still a thing.
Still a thing. The internet still works. iTunes is still linking to us. Our web host is still hosting us. And people are still listening. It's great. I love it.
And we remember to show up.
Yeah.
And even prepare for a couple minutes.
Yeah. It's fun now and again. It's been a good week. I mean, we actually saw each other in person.
In person.
Yeah.
IRL.
In meat space is what I've heard.
What, because we're made of meat?
Yeah.
Or is it M-E-E-T? M-E-A-T, meat space?
I have seen it as meat space because it's to distinguish it from cyberspace.
Oh, okay.
Who says cyberspace anymore?
I don't know.
Golly.
Old people?
Oh. I guess I deserve
unless,
that.
Unless cyber is followed by the word sex or punk.
Then it's okay.
Then it's fine.
Yeah. I guess I deserve that after the harsh treatment on Tabletop Day this Saturday.
You traitorous bastard.
So, International Tabletop Day was this last Saturday, as we mentioned last week on the podcast, and I had a little get together at the headquarters down here for the South Bay branch of the Not a Thing podcast. We had some folks over and played some board games. Generally had a good time. One of the games we played was The Resistance, which is a great game, or a horrible game.
To be clear, it's the Avalon variant.
Yes, which is the, I guess The Resistance came out maybe 3 years ago or 2 years ago, and it was designed as a game that you play as spies in the resistance against this corrupt kind of government in the kind of far off future, and it's slightly sci-fi the way they kind of draw everything. All the game art is that way, but what I always found confusing was the game is set up so there are there's the resistance and then there's spies in the resistance, so it's like, who are the good guys here? The resistance or the spies? Because you're all kind of traitors to the government as you're being resistance, but you're traitors to the traitors. So there's this, like, I don't understand what's going on kind of aspect of it. So they revamped the game and set it in kind of Arthurian England. So you play as either the knights, the loyal servants of Arthur, or the minions of Mordred, and I think it makes it more clear if you're good or bad. But
the servants, the loyal servants of Arthur, or the Meridians.
So the in joke there is when we first played this game, we played through maybe 12 games with a few different sets of people. And in every game, in literally every game, my wife was a spy, one of the bad guys. And it was this running joke that, you know, Julie's a spy, Julie's a spy. And so that actually broke New Year's Eve when we played. Actually, it was New Year's Day, technically. So I think it, you know, it was a 2012 thing. But now it seems that
Has been passed.
Yeah, it seems that I'm the bad guy every go round. So so yeah, it's fun. It's a game where all the players close their eyes and only the bad guys open their eyes. So the bad guys know each other and know who else is bad. And then as you play, you kind of go through these rounds of voting, and you're supposed to deduce through the voting and whether you succeed or fail who the bad guys are. And it's a pretty simple mechanic. I've been told that it's similar to Werewolf or Mafia, if you've played either of those games. I have not played either, so I actually don't know. But it's the kind of thing where you... it's a lot of kind of finger-pointing and yelling and
yeah, a lot of accusation. Bias and vitriol.
Yeah.
And it should never be the last game of the night that you play, because it does nothing but breed mistrust and bad feelings. It's the game where everybody loses, but it's still really fun to play.
Yeah. Yeah. There's good games like that. Like, I think maybe the opposite of that is Cards Against Humanity, which I think has an element of just shared misery that keeps it light, you might say.
The darkness keeps it light.
Yeah. If you're not familiar with Cards Against Humanity, you might know, if you know Apples to Apples, I've heard this game described as Assholes to Assholes, which it's
pretty accurate.
Yeah, it's a game where you there are questions or fill in the blank kind of questions, and then everyone submits answers, and the answers the questioner of that round decides anonymously which answer is the best, and then that person wins that round. The fill in the blank kind of questions and answers are meant to be somewhat disgusting and or offensive pretty much consistently. And so it can be fun to play with a group, because it just kind of it takes all the pretense out of playing apples to apples out of it. Because whenever you play apples to apples, you kind of want to be like, oh, maybe if we make this one a little dirty, it'll be really funny. But this is like, they're all really dirty. And it ends up being pretty fun. Maybe solid, not for the easily offended, or when your mom is playing.
Oh, God. That was horrible. And also hilarious.
Yes. I really felt for you. That was quite the experience, let's just say.
Yeah. Choose your co-players wisely.
Yeah. For sure. What other games did you get to that day?
I believe one was called Skyline.
Yeah.
Or Skyscraper.
It was Skyline.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a game where you
not related to the movie Skyline.
No, nothing to do with that piece of crap. No, it's a game where you roll dice with different, each there's different piles of dice that have different parts of buildings, and you try to assemble as many skyscrapers as possible, as large as you can, before the number of turns allotted runs out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty fun. There's some strategy and luck involved, as with most of those games, as with most dice games.
Yeah, it's always I think interesting to balance that strategy and luck, because it can be very one or the other, and then get annoying if it's too much of one or too much of the other.
I'd say it was my second favorite game of the day.
Okay.
Oh, what was after the was it monkey knife gun fight or whatever it is?
Monkeys with knives and guns.
That's the one.
No, I have to say it that way because when I was at the Penny Arcade Expo, I was in a room painting miniatures. Yes, that actually happened. It was free, okay? They gave you the minifigure after you painted it. I still have it somewhere. But while we were in there, there was a vendor right outside for the and they were demoing the game and selling it. And I had actually bought a copy already at that point, because we had met friends of ours there, and they demoed it for us, and we're like, oh, this is cool. And so we got it. But it was just really funny because the guy who was there was very carnival barker kind of voice, and we would just hear this progression of monkeys with knives and guns, monkeys with knives and guns, just like for as long as we were painting the little figures. So, so yeah, it's that one's burned into my brain. It is a fun game. And again, there's that kind of dice rolling and strategy and luck. And
that one has a little more luck than Skyline. Skyline had slightly more strategy.
Yeah. 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 A game that we played that I think it was, yeah, it was before you'd showed up, was King of Tokyo. Also kind of a dice rolling mechanic. And it had a Yahtzee style kind of thing where you could re-roll any number of dice. I think Skyline did that too. You could
Skyline, you could roll three, but there was like a discard pile where you could potentially have more than three dice.
Oh, okay.
To roll.
So in King of Tokyo, you play a monster who is trying to be King of Tokyo, and it's kind of a King of the Hill aspect where you, if you,
damn it, Bobby.
Yeah, man, we're talking about King of the Hill. We're going to run around, you know, whoo. Yeah, so the King of Tokyo, whenever that monster rolls an attack, it attacks everybody else. But then whenever any of the other monsters attack, it attacks only the monster in Tokyo. And you can go for attacks, or you can go for victory points, and you win by either having the most, you get up to 20 victory points or something like that, or you kill all the other monsters, which I think was the way that we ended the game. and it's fun. It's really funny because it comes with a board which has two spots. You're essentially in Tokyo or you're not in Tokyo, and when you're not in Tokyo, you're just not on the board. So it's kind of funny that they had to print that out as a actual board, but. Otherwise, I really liked it. It was a little hard to figure out what was going on, but then as soon as a couple turns go through, it's like, okay, now we know what's going on. And then it just becomes this just massive trash talking game where like, I'm gonna kill all of you. Yes, monster's good. We also played Pit, which is fun. You've played Pit, right? The
I have played Pit. I did not play this weekend though.
The commodity trading game.
Yes.
Much more fun than you might ever think.
The 1% simulator.
Right. So the game is laid out. You get cards that are different commodities, and you have to trade them. And you can trade them by saying, you know, I have three to trade. And then as soon as someone says, okay, I'll trade three with you, you trade them. But they're not rounds or turns. It's all just shouting. I have three to trade, I have three to trade, I have three to trade. And then you have to find someone else to trade with. And then you're trying to complete a set. And then once you complete the set, you get to close trading by ringing the bell. And it's like one of those please ring bell for service kind of bells. And I don't know about you, but it's the kind of thing that's, it's completely Pavlovian. Like, I want to ring the bell.
It's a satisfying bell.
Yeah. Yeah. So you ring it once to open trading and then once to close it. And it's fun. It's a great game. I guess they made a travel version, which doesn't come with the bell. And you're supposed to yell corner. Like, I've cornered the market on wheat. I think the people that play that game, that is not a thing. That you should not play it that way. Even if it's like a marketed as a travel game, you should.
There's better still travel bring the games.
Bell. Bring the bell.
Bring the bell or play zombie dice.
Yes. Oh, zombie dice. That one is another game that's very luck weighted, but and there is kind of the strategy element is. You know, whether you'll roll keep good. Rolling or not. The nice thing about that game is that you, there's no limit on the number of players, essentially, because you're just taking turns rolling the dice, I mean, the only downside is when you're not rolling the dice, you're kind of just watching that person roll the dice. So, but it's a good kind of in-between game. It's a good game that you can play when you're like in line for stuff. Or at least I played it a lot when I was in line for stuff. at the Penny Arcade Expo, where everyone was playing games of some sort while waiting for things. I didn't
have. That seems like that would be a requirement.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't have my DS at the time, or I didn't have a new enough one, so I'm not. I didn't have the 3DS last year, so I was not playing with everybody. I have mine this year, though. I'm ready.
You know what would be an entertaining line game? Is Space Team. People standing in line shouting at each other.
Oh, we'll probably get Space Team going. Assuming there's enough Wi-Fi or Bluetooth bandwidth in the hall, we'll definitely get that going. That's so not a board game, but it's I think it's only an iOS game right now.
And
so
it's free.
For a free game, it's really good.
Yeah.
It's a game where it puts up a panel of kind of imaginary tech speak buttons and switches, and they're like, you know, vent plasma and ray shields. So it's kind of
got out the laundry.
Yeah. It's got a kind of absurdist Star Trek feel to it. And the commands show up asymmetrically on everyone's panels. So like there'll be a command to ray shields, but it won't be on. But my panel won't have ray shields, so Brendan's would. So I'd have to yell ray shields, and Brendan would have to hit it. Whereas on Brendan's screen, it says something like set teleprompter to 6 or something like that. And so you're trying to do that, and then it'll toss in things like an asteroid's coming. You have to shake your controller to avoid the asteroid or things like that. It's kind of frantic and really replicates that weird tech speak on Star Trek kind of aspect of it. I like it.
Yeah, I got the family to play on Easter.
Oh, and, nice.
Yeah. A good time was had by all.
Nice. And I think one other game that we played was we played Small World, which is kind of like, I've heard it described as Risk, but there's no rolling to attack. You if you have enough people to take over the next area, you just do. But the thing about it is that there's no way to hold the entire board. So eventually you will just become extended, and then you have to put your kind of team in decline, and then you get to re-roll another kind of race and power, and then take over in a different spot. It's an interesting game of kind of area control and kind of timing, playing against other people. I'm not sure how else to describe it. It is like Risk in that you win by eventually kind of being in charge of more of the board than other people, but because there's kind of a generational aspect to it where you're in control and then you'll eventually lose control just because of how the game mechanic goes, you have to just be good about timing when you change who you're playing as and stuff. Plus it's
a fun game.
Yeah.
I think the iOS version is probably better because the board takes a long time to set up.
It does take a little while to set up. what else did we play? I think that might have been it that day.
It was a successful tabletop day.
Yeah, yeah. There's more in this house that we can play, so we'll have to have another one soon and crush through a few more. Tabletop games are fun. It's not all 3D graphics and stuff like that, but I think even we talked about it last week that, you know, one of the games that we're both playing that's really fun is the Walking Dead game, which is not a really big, you know, graphics intense kind of game. I mean, I think things are rendered in 3D, but for the most part, the mechanic is mostly kind of choose your own adventure kind of like. And so it's not a, I think, you know, there's some, I mean, that has to do with, you know, there's just a lot of good storytelling in the game. And so that's what makes it good. And less about, you know, the fast twitch response, which is important still in some games, you know, but, yeah, go play games. They're fun.
Go, more importantly, go play games with people.
Yes.
Real human people.
Interaction is fun. kind of, there's no good segue to this, so.
Other than fun.
Yes, fun is something that I learned about this weekend on, I think it was, oh, I don't remember where I saw the article, but. It was talking about a rifle scope. Yes, I went there. That is powered by what was it, a $17,000 like software package and computer.
Linux based.
Oh, it's open source. How nice.
Yep.
And what it does is it kind of takes over some of the functions of the rifle you're shooting. So when you aim at something and you kind of I forget how you indicate that that's what you want to shoot at. You like press a button and it does a range finding thing, and then will figure out how far it is and then do the calculations based on what, you know, what bullet you're shooting and gun you're shooting, and then do the bullet drop compensation in the scope, and then it also has sensors to do like the windage and stuff like that, which is, I don't even know how it does, but once you've taken, you know, you've essentially targeted the thing you want to target, it uses image recognition and object detection to tell the edges of the object and then locks that in. So when you move the scope just a little bit, it tries to keep like the target on it. And then when you decide you want to fire, when you pull the trigger, it doesn't actually shoot until you line up the crosshair that it thinks where the bullet's going to go with the target. And then once it's confident that you're steady enough to fire, then it fires. Which is ridiculous.
It's cheating.
Yeah, I mean, you're essentially...
totally cheating.
You're not even, like, shooting at that point. You're almost just telling the computer, I want to shoot this thing, and you do it. Which
teaching
I guess...
computers how to shoot. That's just what we need.
Right. We're teaching computers what people are shaped like, target wise, so it can figure that out, and then B, how to best shoot them. I'm pretty sure this is. Admittedly cool technology, but ultimately probably not good for the human race as a whole.
No.
For a number of reasons, least of which it would be used to eradicate said human race.
It's all cool until we're on the other side of that scope.
Yeah. It's...
That's really impressive.
It is really, really, really impressive. I'm amazed at how much it costs, but I guess...
I mean, guns are expensive, but that's really expensive.
Yeah. Well, I guess if you absolutely have to hit your target, it's going to get you there. So,
if you don't have time for training and skill, but you've got money, now you can kill things efficiently.
Oh... One of my friends did some archery recently, and she apparently has trouble hitting, you know, just targets at kind of reasonable practice distances. It's not all the time, but she doesn't always hit it. but then found a place and they were doing moving target training. So it had this kind of pulley and you'd pull a weight and it would slide a bale of hay, like, you know, in front of you or whatever. And she apparently was hitting that every time. So, nice. A, she's going to be on my team for the zombie apocalypse, but B, yeah, don't underestimate the human ability now and again.
That reminds me, now that...
Hear that, robots?
That reminds me, now that the weather's getting good, we need to go shooting again.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe...
And maybe now it won't be zombie training, it'll be robot training.
Yeah.
People to fight back.
Yeah. I don't know if I can bring my $17,000 Linux assisted scope, but I'll see what.
Well,
I
you've got that, is our server run on a Linux machine? You should probably strap that to your rifle.
It's pretty much the same thing. I think that'll work.
Yeah.
The podcast listeners won't mind if we appropriate those resources for firearms.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
It's for the good of the podcast.
We will have a well defended podcast.
Oh, if only we had lasers.
We don't need lasers. We have bullets. And reasonable skill at using them.
Yeah. So apparently where they have lasers is at Lawrence Livermore Lab. And I had always known that they had lasers there, but I didn't know what this was. They were for. Back in the 1980s, there was a movie called Tron. And in that, there's a scene when there's this, they're like doing some kind of laser fanciness. And apparently that was all filmed at Lawrence Livermore Labs, where there were actual lasers, and there still are. And the deal is that the facility is called the National Ignition Facility, which just sounds awesome, first of all.
Yes.
And then second of all, it's because they use lasers to try to generate nuclear fusion. And I was interested in this because it sounded like the kind of thing where they're trying to use lasers to do nuclear, like a self-sustaining or a reasonably sustaining nuclear fusion reaction to generate energy. And no, it's actually not to generate energy. It's to test and make sure that the nuclear weapons stockpile is A, still viable, and B, that they can... recreate whatever it takes to ignite a nuclear weapon just in case they need to. it's kind of both interesting and morbid at the same time.
So it's less Tron and more real genius.
Yeah. And it's like not that far away. It's in Berkeley. the article is a little bit techy. I will warn you, if you're going to dive into it, we'll link it in the show notes, but kind of fascinating, like what science gets to do. I mean, it, you know, all joking aside, it was, it is being researched in order to, you know, I mean, the initial plan was because they're trying to make sure the nuclear stockpile still works, but I mean, the side effects are, you know, they're actually trying to do it to figure out how to make fusion reactors, which...
we should totally do.
Yeah, fusion power should be a thing, if only to power, you know, a Mr. Fusion that I can then stick on a DeLorean to turn into a time machine, then yes, yes.
Or space power. Exploration.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I suppose you could use it for that too. That's okay.
I think you'd have better luck getting fusion work than finding a functional DeLorean.
Fair enough.
It's not the 80s anymore, Alan. Get over it.
Oh, it was barely the 80s when those movies came out. Anyway. Where were we? I forgot.
Lasers.
Lasers good.
Lasers good.
Lasers good. Nuclear weapons bad. Fusion research good. Right? Is that the
bullets good? Automatic aiming bad.
Except when automatic aiming is used against the robots.
Oh, well, then that's fine.
Yeah. Would the robots let us use automatic aiming against themselves?
No, I think we would have to, like, step away from technology. All of Battlestar Galactica. There's no Wi-Fi networks.
Right.
There are no networks, period.
Well, but isn't your job in networking right now?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but see, I work for a company that does DSL, so... It's phone lines, that's fine.
Yeah. It's all right. Everything's good. Oh, man. So what else happened this last week? I want to make sure we have enough time to talk about what was on TV this last week. So I do, let's see, which of the three topics do we pick? Oh, money. Okay. Money?
Always go with money.
Money? All right. So there was a thing released on Wikimedia Commons, which is just kind of a fact and stuff dumping ground of, you know,
repository
freedom.
Is yes. A nicer way of putting it. Jumping ground.
They kind of put you know, freedom of information articles in there and lots of good data. It's not like WikiLeaks, let's just say. It's kind of really just cool
it's
and interesting
more mundane.
Stuff. Yeah.
The mundane WikiLeaks.
But one of the things they posted that was highlight from I think it was on Boing Boing was just pictures of money. And they had a picture of a $10 bill, which looked awesome.
It has a thing on it that I don't think exists anymore, right? Or is very limited in its existence.
Oh, what was it?
The buffalo.
Oh, is it actual, like, bison?
Or bison.
Right. The which are extinct now, unfortunately. But yeah. It's not only was it, I mean, but it was an animal that was on, you know, that was still alive at the time. You don't have to put dead things on your money is what I'm saying about it.
Well, Canada already knows that. They put kids playing hockey on their money.
It's just cool. I mean, I think American money is boring. And I know they tried to revamp it a little bit by putting like doing the quarters thing. A while ago, the state quarters, not as fun as it could have been, maybe. I mean, first of all, there's just no color on any money for the U.S., and I feel like just that would make it a little more interesting and probably harder to counterfeit. I mean, you can. I feel like if you can, you know, print. Like one or two colors, it's possible to do it, right? You know, to put a few more colors on it, it's maybe a little harder. But what another thing that was interesting was that they put, like they were highlighting not only animals and like kind of images of people, but artistic motifs and architecture and stuff like that. I mean, not the kind of neoclassical that's, you know, all over Washington, which is, you know, on the back of bills now. But like, you know, really interesting architectural things from, you know, like the fancy decorative kinds of things on the corners of buildings or, you know, light fixtures or really just anything. I mean, there's so much kind of art and imagery from people from the United States. I feel like there could be more interesting things on money.
Definitely.
Yeah. Write your congressman.
If you could put one face of a living person on money, other than your own, or mine, or Julie's. Or actually, anyone's face that you, someone you don't actually know.
Not a person I actually know.
Yes.
On money.
Yeah, who would you put?
Wow, that's interesting.
And what bill would they go on?
I think I would love a Bill Clinton $5 bill. Or maybe a... Yes. No. He should go on like a... It should be maybe not a 20, because I think it should be kind of high circulation, but maybe not a 20 or a 1, which I think you get a lot of. Maybe like a 50, because they're kind of cool, but they're a little annoying because you can't really use them everywhere. But, you know, it's recognizable and it's there. Like, I don't think I know who's on the 50 right off the top of my head. Is that a...
Grant?
You're probably right, because it's Alexander Hamilton on the 20, and... Or is that the 10?
No.
Oh, no. No, I don't know who's on the...
Jefferson's on the 20. Or is okay. He on the... Yeah, Lincoln's on the 5. Yeah, see? Maybe we should figure out what's actually on our money before we start thinking of new things to go on.
But I would go with Bill Clinton.
Good call. Good call.
I think, you know, if we're going to go with presidents, you know, I think he's probably the most interesting president in the last little while. Although that Obama guy's doing okay. I think it's too soon, though.
Too soon.
Well, how about you?
I would do a reissue of the $2 bill with Weird Al Yankovic on it. Or you do a 20 with Michael Jackson on it, and you have black Michael Jackson and white Michael Jackson on opposite sides.
Awesome. Yeah, so you would put people on the backs of bills, because currently it's like people on the front and then like buildings on the back.
But I would even put multiple, because there's on this $10 bill of this old one in the article, mm-hmm. just two different people on the front of the bill. So you could do like Biggie and Tupac on like a 50 on the same bill.
Wouldn't that have to go on the 100?
Oh, yeah, I guess it would have to go on the 100. Yeah.
Oh. Good stuff.
What I really want is reissue the 50 cent piece with 50 cent on it.
The 50 cent piece.
Yeah, the 50 cent piece. That might be too on the nose.
Awesome. Well, I think
money's still a thing.
Yeah, at least for a little while longer, yeah. At least until the zombie apocalypse, right?
And then it's all money is counted in food and bullets.
Not even a $17,000 Linux guided scope can save you now.
No. I would not want that in the zombie apocalypse. That would be useless.
Oh. But speaking of zombie apocalypses, the finale of The Walking Dead, season finale for season 3 was this Sunday.
Spoilers ahead if you have not seen The Walking Dead.
Yes, I think spoilers from here on out are guaranteed. So if you're into that, keep listening. If not, hey, we'll see you next week.
Take a hike.
But in 3 words or less, go.
What? Is that... Oh, damn it. I'm already out of words.
What the hell I was going to say. I mean, I liked it. I did. I really, I did. And even as a person who's read the comic, because it still like opens up a lot of potential. But ultimately I felt kind of let down by the finale-ness of it. I don't feel like it was very...
It didn't feel very finale-y.
No.
It felt like the second-to-last episode of a season.
Right.
But it was the last episode of the season.
Yeah. I would almost rather the last episode have been the Lenny James clear episode, you know, with Morgan.
That was one of the best of the season, for sure.
Easily the best one. And
I actually really liked the second-to-last episode.
Oh, that was good, too.
With the end of Merle.
Yeah.
Which I never would have thought by the end I would have felt bad about him dying. But I'll be honest, I did.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's
somewhat redeemed himself.
Right. Whereas I feel like Andrea's death, I didn't feel super bad about that.
No, she was an idiot.
I mean, I understand that they were building her as kind of like, no, I'm trying to just do everything right. I'm trying to, you know, make it, you know, do it without hurting anybody or anybody dying. It's like, yeah, well, how'd that go for you? It's like, unfortunately, you know, I mean,
that would have been more believable if she wasn't banging the governor. I gotta think that played into it somewhat.
Maybe that may have had something to do with it.
No, but he's really a nice guy. You just don't know him like I do.
Well, the issue with it for me was that if that is really the kind of defining moment of the season, they're meaning that that arc for her was really kind of the big thing for that season. And I don't think that's what it was. I mean, I'm pretty sure the arc is that the governor's going to kill everyone in the prison. And that's the part that needed...
And then he ended up just killing his own people instead.
Yeah. I mean, that's the part that needed resolving for me. And I don't feel resolved at all with that. So,
no.
Yeah. Still, you know, Tyrese is with the group.
That's good. Cut finally. Back.
Although honestly, I was talking with Julie about Tyrese, because she asked me, you know, because I'd read the comic and I know how Tyrese is in the comic, and I'm pretty excited for that if they're really developing him as much as that. But really, Tyrese as a character so far has just kind of been a big apologizer.
I'm sorry, man. I can't do that.
It's just a whole lot of, you know, I don't want any trouble. I'm sorry about this. Sorry this went this way. I'm not really seeing him as someone I'm excited for yet. And I'm not sure if it was just kind of shot in a weird way, or maybe they edited some stuff out. But remember the scene when he's with Sasha, and then he says, you know, he essentially takes her watch, and she's like, you know, he's like, no, I got this, it's okay. I thought they were gonna do something with that, like he was gonna find Andrea or find some evidence of the governor, you know, killing everybody or something like that. And then the next scene that he's in, he and Sasha are both on the wall shooting at Rick and company. So,
well, what I read that they did a bunch of rewrites on the end, how the season was going to end, because Glenn Mazzara is leaving the show. So the guy who's taking over, Scott Gimple, rewrote the ending of the episode.
Oh, you're kidding me.
So that Rick and everyone who was with him weren't the ones who find Andrea. It was going to be Tyrese that found her.
Huh.
So that's probably why you saw that, I would expect.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm kind of unhappy about that.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm looking forward to Scott Gimple's stuff, because he obviously can write. I mean, he wrote that episode. But I'm kind of unhappy with the level of kind of mucking with there was with that episode. I mean, I can't ever tell like how much of that is real and how much of that isn't. But I remember reading the things about how Frank Darabont wanted to do the first episode of season two, you know, before he was let go, and just how that was going to flow. Did you hear about that at all?
Wasn't it was going to focus on like an army group?
Yeah.
It was
so
basically rebooting the season essentially.
Well, it was going to be all done from the point, from of view point of view of the, in the episode where Rick he hides in the tank, and then there's the zombie in there and he shoots it. And then he gets, signaled by Glenn. So the guy in the tank, they did a whole storyline with that guy before he was a zombie, and you know, just to show like the kind of in a fast forward of how bad it got right away. Like, you know, because he was in the army, just he was essentially invading Atlanta, and then, you know, showing
which would
how
have been awesome.
Yeah. Right.
Way better than sitting on a friggin' farm.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, that would be really brave because it is taking it kind of away from the comic more, because that wasn't in the comic at all. And I don't think they do any, yeah, they don't do any flashbacks like that in the comic. It's all, you know, just the group live in the present as it happens. And I think they had more chances to do stuff storyline-wise that way. But even still, just deviating from the comic just for the sake of deviation from the comic, I feel like they should. And in fact, the more they do, the better. Because I feel like comic fans have too much sway in how the show goes or how it looks. And I don't think a lot of the people that watch the show have necessarily read the comic.
I haven't.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it stands alone and is good and can continue to do so without feeling like it has to wink at the comic readers in order to like keep them on board. Because I think it's developed enough as its own show and has its own life that it can just, you know, go and breathe. Kind of like how I think Game of Thrones is. Like, I haven't read the books and I thoroughly enjoy it as a show. You know, its premiere was Sunday. Actually, it was at the same time as The Walking Dead finale. I chose The Walking Dead finale. Sorry, HBO.
I chose Game of Thrones, so ha! And I watched it live on HBO legally.
Are you implying something?
That I usually don't watch it live legally? Actually, that's not true, because the first two seasons I actually had HBO. So I was watching it the way it's intended.
The way nature intended.
Yes.
Well, I think for a season premiere it was probably okay, but as an episode of a show it needed some more stuff to happen.
Well, like the battle that happens at the Fist of the First Men that we saw all the zombies walking up at the end of last season.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the book the battle happens and it's really cool. But they didn't show it on the show.
Yeah, they literally did not show it because if I'm remembering
they cut
correctly,
to black and you're just like, ah, right? Wait a minute. I mean, I know that your budget is really high, and you know, I know there's other things they're saving it for, and they did produce what was it, the most expensive show ever filmed with Battle of Blackwater.
But yeah.
Still, I was like, come on, it's a great part of the books.
Yeah, I'm assuming they're not gonna cut everything. I'm sure there'll be.
There's a lot to cut. Those books are over 1,000 pages a pop. So
do you know, is this season gonna be all of book the third book, or are they splitting that book up over two seasons? Because
my understanding is they're splitting it up over two seasons.
Yeah,
which is good because there's a lot that happens that needs to be focused on.
So
maybe some would say, I would include myself with those people, that maybe one of the best things in the series occurs in this book.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I'm not going to spoil that.
Thank you.
All I will say is that when I read it, I threw my book across the room. I was so angry.
Wow.
It was good. It was terribly good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'm excited. I'm excited for it. If
yeah. I think that might be the only time I've ever thrown a book in anger from something that I've read.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've stopped reading books that I was angry about, but I've never actually thrown one.
Well, not angry because it was poorly written. It's really well written. Angry because of what happens.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
It's a good show. It's a good
show.
It
is a good show. and pretty darn faithful to the books, which is nice to see.
Yeah. Yeah, so they haven't invented anything for the show.
Kind of. They've expanded characters that aren't really in that much in the books just to provide some continuity.
Okay. And I assume they've like composited some characters kind of to like they, you know, there are three characters here, really. But instead we'll just have this one guy say all these lines or.
Not really.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, maybe, if there's, they if, might have made there's no shortage of characters on this show, actually.
No, there's so many characters. I mean, we have the whole premiere and they only got to what, like 3/4 of the storylines.
Hmm. That's so true.
You didn't even see what happened with Brienne and Jaime. You didn't see what happened with Arya. You didn't see, you know,
yeah,
what happened with Theon. You don't
right.
know.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
Nothing good.
Oh, well, yeah.
Because it's not a happy show. It's like Lord of the Rings without all the hope. Like, everyone's an asshole. It's great.
Awesome.
And on that note, I think we should end the podcast.
Sounds good. I'll talk to you next week, Brendan.
Till the next time.